Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Whether you're on a walk in your neighborhood and forgot your snacks or find yourself lost on a hike, you might be surprised to hear that you can forage for food, like literally grab and go with edible things there for the taking on our streets, trails, really anywhere. Today on CityCast Las Vegas, I'm sitting down with our resident food historian, Sarah Lohman, to find out just how edible our desert landscape is, but also what you really need to know before you start biting into food stuff that you find. It's Thursday, March 28th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. CityCast co-host Sarah Lohman. We will be talking a lot today about what we can eat on the streets.
Yeah.
But how do you know what you should not be eating out there in the valley?
Okay, that's fair. So here is how I learned how to forage. I first started out east, but then when I moved here to Vegas, it just felt really important to me to learn the names of the plants. It makes me feel more at home. And once you start foraging, you start like, as opposed to now looking at an empty lot filled with weeds, to me now all those plants have a name and a personality. So like it's really a joy. So I have two books to recommend for Nevada specifically. One of them, I'm going to pick them up. I've got them right here, David Figler, so I can remember the names.
Got it.
I actually got this at the Red Rock Visitor Center. It's called Indian Uses of Desert Plants by James W. Cornett.
I love that space. I love that space. There's so much cool stuff up there at Red Rock.
Agree. And I pulled this right off the shelf and, you know, also then got to buy it at Red Rock and support them too, which is nice. This isn't exclusively foodways, but it's, as you can see, a very slim book. It's got full color photographs. It's got essays of the majority are edible plants, but also tells you other uses too. And it's just like a very, very good place to start because it's so Mojave specific and you're not going to get overwhelmed with too many options. And then the other book I recommend getting right away is called Southwest Foraging, 117 Wild and Flavorful Edibles from Barrel Cactus to Wild Oregano by John Slattery. This one is just on Amazon or wherever you get your books. As you can see, it's quite a bit thicker. We're dealing with more plants, but it's really detailed, focuses on edible plants specifically, and also has great ideas of how to harvest them, how to do it sustainably, and then how to use them.
I want to put you in the Mojave Desert, whether we're in the urban landscape or out on, like, you know, we talk about on hikes.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there stuff that you would eat?
Oh, absolutely.
Would you eat it right away, or would you take it home and then eat it there?
Depends on the food. I mean, wow. Some plants, there is a thrill in like forcing, that's a harsh word, I'm with to eat it. But recently I was out in the Bay Area and the magnolias are blooming. And I was there with actually a contact for a gig. And I was like, do you know those are edible? Would you eat one? She's like, no. And I'm like, what if I ate one? She's like, okay. And then she did it and they taste like ginger. They're lovely. So there is a little bit of like sharing this that I really, really love. But there are a ton of edible plants down here in the desert. We're going to focus on spring ones today, and we're going to look at the urban landscape because there's a little bit more stewardship and nuance to go out into BLM land or into a state park because those are also areas for indigenous peoples to harvest their traditional plants.
Okay, so here in southern Nevada, what are you most excited to forage, not just identify, but take up with you this season?
Yeah, so let's talk about yards, essentially.
Oh, we're starting right at home. We're going right to the yards.
Oh, literally in my backyard, I've identified and learned about a new delicious plant this spring that is highly invasive, and that's called London Rocket. So London Rocket is the British word for arugula, and the leaves sort of look like arugula, but it grows sort of vertically like a thistle, and it has tiny, tiny yellow flowers on the top. It is growing everywhere right now. It loves a sandy backyard. It loves a disturbed area. It loves a vacant lot. And this is a super, super invasive plant. So when you find it, pull it out by the roots. And it's also so delicious. It's really spicy at first, a little bit like arugula, but it's also in the mustard family. So it's got this really intense sort of mustard spice in the leaves at the end. I like mixing it in with other greens and sauteing it. I did an awesome, I cooked it with some beet greens that I had. And I also just did a recipe from this great book. You know Leah Koenig. You have one of her cookbooks.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. So she's got a new one coming out called Portico. And she has a recipe for spinach greens, but I mix spinach and London Rockets. And then it also has onions and lemon zest, and you top it with toasted pine nuts. Delicious. I think it'd also be like a good pickled condiment too.
Oh, fun. Yeah. And I think we're going to list all these books in our show notes. But Sarah, let's stay close to home. So you got this London Rocket popping up in people's yards. What else might someone find a few steps from their front door?
Dandelion. I mean, dandelion. Oh, you can eat it, David. It's actually traditional Italian green. So it's not a part of contemporary Italian cuisine as much because people see it as a weed, especially for the Italians that came here. It was a little bit looked down upon, like we're going to eat meat, not forage anymore. But it's a super edible, bitter green. It's good for sauteing, also salads. You should rip it out before the bud blossoms. The bigger it gets, the more bitter it gets, but some people really like that. Oh, I said her name was Koenig. I always forget. It's Koenig. Did I do it right the first time? Leah, I'm so sorry. Leah Koenig's book, Portico, also has a great recipe for sauteed dandelion greens with chili flakes. You can put some toasted breadcrumbs on top, olive oil. Absolutely delicious.
Wow. And the price is right.
100% free and so delicious. And, you know, you can win the battle with weeds by getting to eat them, too.
Now, are there any that can be eaten right out of the ground? We can move beyond your house now, like stuff that if you were around Southern Nevada throughout the valley, where you might be able to just kind of eat and go while you're right there.
You know, I like sauteing London Rocket and dandelion, but you can just eat and go right there. I mean, you might want to rinse them. I'm less picky. I do know what's going on in my backyard. And honestly, and this is not what I recommend for beginners, one of the ways that foragers and mycologists, mushroom hunters, ID plants is by tasting a little bit, because you can kind of taste what you're looking for and a little nibble ain't going to kill you.
Okay, so I just need to pause on that. Are you sure? I mean, is this the advice we're giving the children at home, that a little nibble ain't gonna kill you?
Don't eat berries, but when it comes to greens and often mushrooms, like just taking a bite and seeing if it should taste like what you think the plant ID is, great. And also just to see if you like the taste of this plant. I can give you a great example of a beginning plant that is highly identifiable both by sight and taste. How about that?
Yeah, I want the more highly identifiable. I don't want the gray area ones or the possible. Well, it's either really super delicious or you will die in 10 seconds.
I mean, anything in that arugula and mustard family, they're all related to like broccoli as well. So things like nettles, thistles, dandelions, rocket, like all edible, whether you like the taste or not.
Yeah.
Really identifiable one is one called sorrel. Wood sorrel is specifically. Now, a lot of people mistake this for clover, but I've got a really Vegas-based way to tell the difference.
Okay.
So clover has a leaf that's shaped like a spade, and sorrel has a leaf that's shaped like a heart. That's it. And then the easiest way to tell if what you're looking at is sorrel. So it's got these heart-shaped leaves. It kind of grows low to the ground, tiny yellow flowers. But if you take a leaf and take a bite of it, it's going to taste very, very, very lemony. Mm. It's very acidic. And so it has a distinct lemon flavor. It's really awesome in salads because of that brightness. But the French traditionally make like a spring sorrel soup with it.
Okay, so if you play your cards right, ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
You find the heart and you got something tasty and lemony.
It's going to grow all over watered lawns. Like I used to live in like a sort of 1980s condo complex where they still had pieces of lawn covered in sorrel. Super, super easy to harvest. You just pick it up.
Right here in the valley.
Right here in the valley.
Do you have any other sorrel recipes?
Yeah, I have this great cookbook called Nevada Grown, A Year in Local Food, and they have a recipe for sorrel pesto. It's sorrel and parsley and garlic and pine nuts and olive oil and Parmesan, and it's like awesome on pasta. And I think it's a really great way to use that fresh, lemony flavor of sorrel.
Hey, it's David Figler, and one of my favorite food festivals is coming back to town. It's Vegas Unstripped over at the Palms Hotel on Saturday, May 18th. over 24 chefs from some of Las Vegas's most talked about restaurants creating original, unique menu items they've never made before. Chef creativity at its best. We're talking chefs from Partage, Esther's Kitchen, Milpa, EDO, and more, including this year's James Beard Award finalist Steve Kessler from Aroma. Tickets are $150 and are all-inclusive of food and drink, so you don't have to pay for anything once you're inside. No hidden upcharges. I went last year, and it was so crowded in the best possible way. We got one remarkable dish after another, and while it was a little indulgent, here's the best part. The net proceeds go to local charities. So head on over to VegasUnstripped.com to get your tickets now. We'll see you there.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Do you want to talk about some native plants we can eat?
Yeah, I do. Because I'm curious with like what's year round or what's just kind of right now because spring has, you know, technically sprung-ish.
Yeah.
So we're right on the precipice. I mean, the weather is a lot nicer. I see blooming all over the valley right now. So yeah, tell us what else is out there.
Sure. So the greens are the first ones to show up, but pretty soon we're going to get edible flowers blooming. And my two favorites are yucca flowers. All yucca flowers are edible. In fact, all yuccas are edible, but some taste better than others. And this time of year, I like to stick with the flowers. Just pick the petals, check for ants and other bugs, give them a shake, and you can snack on them right there. They've got a really lovely light floral flavor. And then the other plant that we're going to see blooming soon is the desert willow. I see that in landscaping all over Henderson. You know, it kind of has a general shape of a willow. The flowers are pink or purple. The flowers are also a treat for desert tortoises. They really love them. You can eat them, but the Southwest Foraging Book actually recommends making a sun tea out of them. So you fill a jar half full of desert willow flowers, you fill it the rest full of water, again, rinse the flowers, and then you put it in the sun for 3 to 5 hours, and it makes a lovely, lightly sweet tea. The flowers are sort of lightly sweet. So harvest them by picking up freshly fallen desert willow flowers off the ground or gently plucking them from the plant. If they release easily, they are ready for you.
Got it. So what are like good tips then? If people are going to, you know, be courageous and do a little bit of free foraging of food within our valley, what would be, I'd just say, tips or reminders for our neighbors who might want to try this foraging out this season?
Sure. If you are not 100% sure what that plant is, don't eat it. I mean, that's, again, why I recommend the Seek app and why I've thrown these 5 plants out there, because they're so easy to identify, and that's going to sort of build your confidence, too.
And break down those plants really quick. The 5 that you talked about so far are?
Dandelion, London Rocket, Wood Sorrel, Yucca, and Desert Willow.
Fantastic.
Easy. And like, there's entries for all of those in the books that I mentioned too, so you can look them up. You can also look them up online as well. My general rule of thumb too is if Wikipedia says it's edible, it's like really super edible, because like places like Wikipedia are very, very cautious, and Seek are very cautious about IDing something as edible. So if something is generally acknowledged as being edible, it absolutely is.
Yeah. And as far as tips and reminders, like how should people go about getting that stuff from ground or tree or wherever to mouth?
Respect your neighbor's property. You know, yeah. if you want to pull weeds out of your neighbor's yard, they'll probably say yes, but you should definitely ask. You were kind of curious about fruit trees, too. Like right now, we're still in citrus season. Technically, if a branch is leaning over the sidewalk, that's fair game, but it's still just nice to ask your neighbors, right? And oftentimes, if someone has a fruit tree that's really abundant, they're happy to get rid of fruit and will let you take from the tree or the ground in their yard.
Actually, I'm going to interject that I don't disagree with you, but there is a little legal gray area here.
Oh, as far as like grabbing some lemon?
As far as the ownership of the tree, yeah. So like I have this neighbor who has a pomegranate that's a little overgrown. Like some branches are jutting well over her fence and hover over the public sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, will she get pissed? Will she get a lawsuit going if you grab one of them? I'm guessing not. You know, in fact, pruning is really good, but you always should ask, especially if you're not sure. Now, there are, I understand that there's maps of like public spaces where there's no issue. And this could be like in medians or just kind of in a public square kind of area where theoretically it seems to be fair game. Yeah.
I mean, walking around my neighborhood here by Water Street and Boulder Highway, there's tons of public landscaping. Like there'll be prickly pears here in August. There's so many desert willows. There's barrel cactus, which we'll get into in the fall too when they're fruiting. So they're like public landscaping, who cares? Like I've definitely walked out into the median at Boulder Highway to like pick prickly pears. And again, if we're talking about empty lots and we're just pulling weeds, there's not an issue. So also I think that's why it's important we're just starting in our urban spaces, because you can just see these things walking along and grab them, right? But if it involves going into private property, I mean, I think there's a benefit to asking, because if someone asked your neighbor, she might also say, oh my gosh, please take all the pomegranates you want. That tree is so big. So there can be a huge advantage to just saying, hey, do you mind if I?
And if you go to some of our curated public lands, you probably want to check what the policy there is too. And I'm sure it's probably posted, you know, while there may be forageable items, you know, whether it's within a conservatory area or a monument area, there's probably distinct rules that people should familiarize themselves before they just start grabbing stuff off the trail. Yeah.
Some states have distinct rules, like where I'm from in Ohio, you can forage in any state park. It's a little unclear in Nevada. It seems to be very park by park. So, you know, if you have the chance to look up the park specifically, if you're going to a state park, you know, look up the rules, but also even in some national parks, you're allowed to forage. I just say that with the caveat, though, that especially here in Southern Nevada, like these are Paiute lands. And so I am not interested in competing with native peoples to harvest some of their maybe traditional foods. So again, that's why at the moment, and especially if you're a beginner, I focus on landscape plants and weeds. But as you sort of move on to other things, like there are plenty of resources you can turn to about sustainable harvesting and harvesting so that you're respecting your native neighbors. And there are also local classes. Foragers come through here and do classes that will also touch on that as well.
Oh, fantastic. I want to just take a quick left turn. We're having this conversation and it's really, I don't know, I don't want to say it's a conversation or privilege, but you're not reliant on foraging for food.
No, it's a hobby for me.
Yeah. And it could be fun and rewarding, I would imagine, in a lot of ways. But I'd imagine that there's a whole population of people out there who are unhoused, who likely depend on some very hardcore versions of foraging, and it's probably a very constant part of their life.
Well, with most of the foods we're talking about today, these do require some processing or cooking, which unfortunately is not something that the unhoused can access. There are too, if someone has online access, websites that tell you things like free public fruit trees that people can access. But I also know your friend and mine, Kim Foster, who wrote The Meth Lunches. One of the things she points out is that food is not one of the difficult things for the unhoused to access. It's not necessarily healthy food, but most of the unhoused people that she has worked with, in her words, you know, were never hungry, that there was food available. Again, not necessarily healthy food. So in my mind, that's not necessarily a concern. Someone who is unhoused in my neighborhood is probably not going after dandelion greens, because also they're very healthy, but not very caloric, let's say. It's nice if you've got a fruit tree or extra food on your property to make that generally available as well. I know that your partner who works with a food bank in Summerlin, they also accept like fruit tree donations too. So you can harvest things and bring them into food banks as well. But to me, the main concern is making sure that I'm not over-harvesting a traditional plant that really belongs to the indigenous people here. They are the original inhabitants of this land. This land belongs to them. So I'd rather work with the sort of like anglicized landscaping in my neighborhood.
Fair enough. And I always appreciate when a Kim Foster conversation bleeds into other conversations. She's a real asset that we should be foraging her mind as much as we can.
Always.
All right. Well, I guess the last question then, Sarah, is why should Las Vegans try out foraging in our desert areas?
You know, it's like I said a little bit at the top, it makes me feel more connected to this land. Coming from the East, I feel like one of the most annoying desert stereotypes is there's nothing out there, when in fact the Mojave is one of the most diverse biomes on the planet. So you just have to learn the plants, and it makes me feel like a more invested steward of the land. It makes me understand the bigger picture about this really beautiful, fertile, diverse natural space that we we live in. And it means that I get to access some delicious foods that you can't buy in grocery stores. Many of these forageable foods, you can't farm them. They have to grow in their natural spaces. And they're wonderful.
Well, I love conversations, Sarah, as you know, about ways to love Las Vegas in different ways. And boy, this certainly was one of them. Sarah Lohman, thanks for joining us on CityCast Las Vegas today.
My pleasure, David Figler.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. If you enjoyed the show, hey, go tell a friend, rate the show. And if you became a member as part of our new membership program, welcome. Don't forget, though, you all can still leave a review on whatever platform you use to listen to this podcast. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Till then, stay lucky. So I cannot strike the image from my head, Sarah, of you in the middle of Boulder Highway pulling stuff out of a median and wondering if people just driving by are thinking you've completely lost your mind.
Probably, but that's not my problem, is it?